get a better release. Everybody would hear us then at 91.5 FM. It would be so awesome. Everybody would hear us.
Listening to WMFO Medford. My name is Pam. You're listening to Further Within the Umbrella of WMFO Medford. This is On the Town with Mikey D, all local music. This week is a busy one. Live from Studio D in the 10 o'clock hour and into the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to be hearing from Studio 2, which I'm super excited about. And prior to that, we're going to have Mr. Corn Ashley come in, play a little acoustic music for y'all. We'll have a little chitter chat about his new album, Broken Biscuits. I believe Biltmore are visiting us. We may even have Dave Crespo. So it's an exciting night. It's a busy night. I'm delighted that you're joining me for this. And right up here, I thought I'd start off with some Field Day. Joan Anderman's son's birthday is today, so Field Day has been on my mind. So happy birthday to your not so little man anymore, and thank you for the music. Field Day. Right here. This is Starlight.
Like the I'll feel fine. keep my mind from thinking it. But there she is at the local market, drawing her pictures and you barely mask it. I keep your pillow cause you still ask it. You still keep me locked to your shadow when no one else sees. All the marks that you left on me are fading away, but I'm still here trying to find something new while I'm stuck here following you like a beating.
Thank you.
they fell as hard as you and me. This ain't our home, but when in Rome, let the leaning tower lean. And all this ocean air breathes new life inside of me, with the sweetest welcome whisper bouncing off the sand and sea. Well, 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 your lover, she serves it cold, and we're both getting pretty old. When I lift it or not, grounded by the sea. And whether lover, friend or foe, just take your heartache, let it go. I took this trip so the boat of us could breathe, so just breathe, breathe. Let's make a break, stop feeling free, stop feeling funky. I got the rhythm inside of me, and I can hear your voice out on the dance floor calling me with the sweetest, come on baby, a bouncing off the city. Well, 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 your lover, she serves it cold.
Primates there, Coast to the Ocean off their album Gasoline. Prior to that, Happy Little Clouds with Fool. Emily Grogan, Day Off, which is something that I would like to take now and again. We started off with Field Day, Starlight for Joan Anderman's son, who had a birthday today, because I'm kind of a sap for that stuff. We have a special guest in the studio.
So special.
We have Mr. Corin Ashley. I'm so excited. So we're delighted. I am delighted. I'm thrilled. I am beside myself. Here's me. Here's me beside myself. Corin's going to be playing some songs acoustic for us, which we're really excited about. But we're going to start off with a song off the new album, Broken Biscuits, which I'm really excited to chat with Corin about. And we will do that. We shall return with that. But first off, this track is Magpie Over Citadel. And here it is. WMFO, Medford.
Falling into little pieces right before your eyes. We can both feel it, but we don't say nothing.
I am such a big fan of slow fades and outros, and you kind of took us to church at the end of one.
That keyboard sound was called Sad Pad. And I was like, well, that's it. Welcome to the Sad Pad.
That is a thing of beauty. Corin Ashley here in the studio with us. We're just delighted that this was off of his brand new album, Broken Biscuits, available at a local retailer near you or it's online available. If you so choose.
It's available wherever music is not sold. That's where you'll find it.
You can track it down there. That song, Magpie Over Citadel. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks.
I really appreciate it. We're just delighted to have you.
You know, I hate listening to my own voice in the headphones, but yours sounds magnificent. So I'm going to leave them on because you sound great.
You're very kind.
I sound like a maniac who has like a riddle before you can cross a bridge.
It's very soothing. It's very soothing. So? I like it. There's a very, very, very mellow tone. Not Mellotron, but the mellow tone.
There's plenty of Mellotron on that record, boy.
Well, so can you tell us a little bit about the story of how this album came to be? You know, I'm really taken with the title Broken Biscuits because I know the first thing that I think of with this, my introduction to that phrase was Pulp. From Misshapes.
Oh, wow.
The line, Misshapes, Misfits, raised on a diet of broken biscuits.
You know, that completely slipped past me. You just blown my mind.
But I know that it's sort of slang for plans going a bit awry.
Yes.
And I imagine that there's a reason for
it's like a deviation
that.
on when the cookie crumbles, you know. Well, I was deep into making this album, about six songs kind of, not done, but well underway. And I was at the gym last January, and I was kind of like, just, I'll try to shorten the story, but I was working out, and I kind of overdid it a little bit. And I kind of got like a gray stripe across my eye. I was just working out, and I got this like gray, just like a gray stripe. And I thought, that's really weird, you know? And I was like, oh, maybe I'll just knock off the workout. And I was going to go home. And when I went to put my turn signal on, my hand felt like jelly. And I thought, that's really, I better go get this checked out. So I went to Somerville Hospital, and they said that I had what was called a dissection of the carotid artery, which is just a little tear in the lining of your artery. And they said, you know, you'll be fine. Blood thinners, take it easy for a few weeks, you'll be fine. But just to be on the safe side, we're going to keep you overnight, and we don't have any beds, so we're going to transfer you to this other hospital in Everett, in Whidden, which I had never been in an ambulance before. So I was like, well, this is exciting. You know, I can put the lights on and everything, you know?
Yeah.
So I went over there, and they gave me a CAT scan, and when they injected the dye for the CAT scan, I had this, I went into anaphylactic shock. I had an allergic reaction to that. I had no idea I would have a reaction at all. My throat swelled up and my head got hives all over it, and I started shaking, and they wheeled me up to my room, and I fell out of my wheelchair and hit my head on the bathroom wall in a weird angle, and I had a stroke. I had a really big stroke. Which, you know, of course, you don't know what's happening. You're just laying there and everybody's looking at you all of a sudden, like very funny, like they're looking at you like my wife was there and she's looking at me like, I've never seen that look on her face before. So they took me in another ambulance ride, which is, again, exciting, to Beth Israel. And that's where they kind of told me, well, your face is really, you know, sagging down. And they were doing all these neurological tests on me where they were pushing on my elbow and then my forearm and trying to get me to resist. And the beginning of my hand was fine, but once they got to my fingers, it just kind of folded right over. And so that's when I started to realize that my fingers didn't work anymore.
Mm.
And I was trying to talk, and it was coming out sounding very, very strange. Nobody understood what I was trying to say. So I was in the hospital for six nights, and that, you know, I kind of lucked out because the neurologist who was on rounds at Beth Israel when I was brought in that night is a guy named Dr. Gottfried Schlaug, who is a German guy who studied classical pipe organ in college and then realized there weren't that many classical pipe organ gigs. So halfway through, he switched to pre-med and became this like really well-known neurologist. But he's always had a passion for how musicians in particular recover from brain trauma.
Wow.
And that's the guy who just happened to be on, and the nurses were like, oh, Dr. Schlag, we got one for you, you know. So he came in and was just very invested in my recovery from the get-go. And I think had it not been for that bit of happenstance, the outcome might have been completely different, but from I think about from day two, he was just very mad of it. You will recover. You will work very, very hard. It will take a long time, but you are going to play music again. And on the third day, he told my wife, I want you to bring a keyboard in. I mean, my hand wasn't doing anything at all. It was like a... But he had a keyboard come in, and it happened to be my goddaughter's keyboard, which was like a student one with light-up keys. And he's like, okay, play me a scale. And it was like a bear paw trying to play the piano, you know. But he's like, well, you know, some things you're going to have to work really hard. And then I spent about... Well, it was about 5 months really before anything reasonable was happening, and about 9 months before I felt like I was kind of back. But I was doing 5 or 6 hours a day of keyboard and stretches and then guitar and bass and trying to get vocal exercise. And I was doing a lot of physical therapy at Spalding, vocal therapy at Mass Eye and Ear. And I caught a real bad case of the copays last year. They're really... So, I think now, and Dr. Schlaug says I'm a miracle, which I am inclined to believe, you know, on every level. But I think I'm about 95% as strong as I was. I make a living as a musician. I run an agency that books bands for private functions, weddings, corporate things. And, you know, about 50% of my income comes from playing, and about 50% comes from running the business. So... Mm. I started kind of putting myself back on gigs in late April last year, way before I was really physically ready. But I just had this inkling, like this instinct, you know. We kept talking about the concept of neuroplasticity, which is your brain reconnecting the synapses through these burnout connections. And he was saying, your brain wants to connect with your fingers want to get a message from your brain, you have to find a way to do something that like makes that happen. And I just kind of knew instinctively that if I got on stage with my band, and the drummer clicked their four sticks together, that my brain was going to really try to make something happen.
Yeah.
Because I've been doing this since I was 14 or 15 years old, and every time a drummer clicks four with their sticks, something happens, always. So I kind of knew something would happen. And I think that made a huge difference. And ta-da, here I am.
Well, it's amazing. It's an amazing thing.
So I finished the album, you know, kind of with some of the songs written about the experience in the hospital, and... I didn't force that aspect of it, but it really came out. And I had the title Broken Biscuits before the stroke, and it was just kind of prescient, I guess, you know.
And you'd written some of the songs, and you'd done some of the recording prior to this happening.
Some of the lead vocals, and then it just like some of the things I wrote about. I'm kind of really hesitant to point out which ones are before the stroke and which ones were after, because I've had people say to me, oh, I listened to this song, and I totally get what you with the stroke. I totally get it. I'm like, yeah, that's good. Do you get that, you know? And it's not factually true, but
yeah,
you can listen to it any way you want, you know? So I try to leave a little bit of room for interpretation in there, you know?
I like that. That's sort of the Michael Stipe approach. I always got a kick out of his story. I don't know if you ever heard the story or read it, him saying that he always loved this particular Bob Dylan song, and he imagined that it, you know, had something to do with lost love, and it's really spoke to his heart. And he read a Bob Dylan interview in which he said, oh, I saw this dog dead at the side of the road, and I wrote a song about it. And Michael Stipe vowed to never talk to people about what his songs
were. But you never
about.
Know a Dylan, though. Yeah, be making this, there might have been no dead dog, you know.
Exactly. Just to get at people. Well, it's a beautiful album, and I'm thrilled that you're here, and you're playing shows. I know that you've played a couple of shows locally. Are you playing more?
Yeah, I have. Tomorrow night I'm in East Hampton at the Luthiers Co-op, which is a cool guitar store that I've always wanted to play at. And on the 26th, I'm playing with a full band at the Plow and Stars. And that's going to be a rocking good time.
Yeah, I love that venue.
Me
too. It's a great place.
It's a lot of fun there.
And the Luthiers, I'm sorry, I'm not
Luthiers
familiar with
Co-op.
The...
Luthiers Co-op. It's kind of like McCabe's in Santa Monica, where it's a guitar store. And they have a little stage, and they have people get up and play songs.
How cool.
I love it. I love that.
That's amazing. That's East Hampton tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So.
Thank you. Did you want to play? Do you want to play a tune for us?
This is one that I think is, to me, this is the highlight of the album. It's one that I wrote with Tanya Donnelly and Brian King from Parks, and it was literally I've been working on it for a little while, You know, my son Harrison was really, really into these graphic novels of L. Frank Baum's sequels to Oz. There's about 14 sequels to Oz, and about 8 of them made into these really cool graphic novels. And there was one called TikTok of Oz, and I started writing this song about a wind-up boy. And it was at Q Division, and we were at the end of a session, and we still had time. So I said, well, let's see if I can, you know, throw this on real quick, you know. And so I literally called Brian, and I said, listen, I'm starting to track a song, and I don't have a bridge. Are you at work today? And he's like, no, I'm off. I was like, can you come over and write a bridge? And he got on his bike and rode over and, like, delivered a bridge. And he's, like, the perfect guy for that because he'll tell you this is what it does and there's no other option and you just do it. So he wrote the chords for the bridge. And then I was thinking, like, it's very kind of like a mechanical sounding song and I wanted something a little bit more organic and slightly, I just wanted some blood in it for the bridge. So I thought maybe I'll ask Tanya, you know, we always talked about writing a song together and she was the perfect person for it. So I would encourage you, I'll play this. But go on Spotify and listen to this song. Listen to what Tanya did on the bridge because it's like Kate Bush on 11. It's amazing. And I would have never, if I had tried to write the bridge myself, I would have never come up with this. So here we go. I am a wind-up boy. Clockwork contraption of everything a man should wanna be. I am a wind-up boy, dreaming of connection, but grounded in reality. I am a wind-up boy. I am a wind-up boy. Copper-coated alibis give shine to all the feelings I've been programmed to expect. Solid to the naked eye, inductor springs and gears that all connect. Very sophisticated circuitry lies beneath my shell. And I am a wind-up boy, clockwork contraption of everything a man should wanna be. I am a wind-up boy, dreaming of connection, but grounded in reality. I am a wind-up boy. I am a wind-up boy. Candy-coated stimuli fuse the pleasure receptors placed inside my head and relays pass through pale brigades, connect, and then they trigger a reflex. I'm up to military spec, I'm rust-proof, clean and dry. I am a wind-up boy. Tinker, tinker, little hands, laying out your many plans. Oh, tick-tock, your heavy heart, beating on. I'm grounded in this cold reality. I am a wind-up boy. I am a wind-up boy. I am a wind-up boy. Watch me unravel. I am a wind-up boy. and I'm spinning like a top. I am a wind-up boy, and I'm throwing off sparks. I am a wind-up boy.
That is just magic.
Thank you.
That is magic. Thank you.
I should have taught you the background vocal before we did it, though.
I sing like a foghorn. So,
yeah.
Radio talk is about as far as my vocal range extends.
I'm really excited because the guys from Studio Two are putting on the suits for a radio appearance.
I was going to say, you and I have this in common. We're both huge Beatle fans.
You kidding me, man? Love them.
And so we're both very excited for Studio Two. Have you chatted with them?
About I have. They're good lads.
Yeah.
They are.
I'm excited. This is my first time seeing them. So
they rock it, man. They really do.
I'm delighted. I'm pleased about that. And you, not this album, but a previous album, you did some recording at Abbey Road. Is that right?
Yeah.
And that was a gift from your wife?
Not exactly. It was on my 40th birthday. My I was driving with my wife, and I have this really good friend from Liverpool named Martin, and he was in a band called the Boo Radleys. They had a couple of hits in England. But we were driving, and she was saying, what do you want to do for your 40th birthday? And I was like, oh, man. We're just driving. And I was like, oh, you know, it'd be amazing. What if somehow I could rent, like, Studio 2 at Abbey Road for one day, you know, and just spend my birthday there? And she started laughing really hard. She goes, you know, you should call Martin, ask him about that idea, and see what he thinks. And I called him, and he started laughing so hard. He's like, yeah, duh. He's like, we've already called them, man. You know, we have a rate for you, and that date's open. And he's like, you're so obvious. But it was pretty great because he put together the band for me as like a gift. I paid for the studio time, but he was like, I'll get a band, don't worry. And he happened to get mostly guys from Liverpool, so I had like the right accents headphones. And then Ed Ball from the TV Personalities, who I love. He lives in North London, and he came down and played piano on it. And then as we were signing into the guest book, Ken Stringfellow from the Posies was there mastering a record. And the engineer was like, oh, Ken, I'll totally sing on this for you, you know. So he came down and sang on it. And it was just like a fantastic day, you know.
Wow.
One of those days that'll live forever in my mind. And Harrison was only, I think, 2 at the time. And I have pictures of him, you know, we're at Abbey Road with this incredible studio. And he's like playing with little cars on the floor. And he insisted on playing drums in the middle of we were trying to record. He's like, I want to play drums.
That's amazing. Is he quite musical? I mean, growing up in your household, I imagine it would be difficult not to be, but...
He's a great little singer, and he actually sings on one song, on the song Jellyfish. He sings on one part, which he doesn't like. He says he could do it much better now, but but I forced him. He wants to remix. He's actually much more of a visual artist. He does some great drawing. He's very into animation, Japanese anime and things like that. But I hear him singing all the time. He's got a great little voice. He just kind of resists me telling him what to do.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I got him a ukulele. Although, I think I found, like, the gateway drug because he's really interested in learning how to play Seven Nation Army. It's in one of his video games. And he's like, do you know how to play that? I was like, I do. He's like, would you show me? I was like, I will. But that's not all I'm going to show you. Once you learn that one.
Yeah, it's a package deal.
Yeah. But he's got his little musical taste, which is very interesting, you know.
Yeah, it's fascinating seeing little people sort of develop that.
He hears things in video games, and you know, like I just kind of wait for him to say something. I take him to school every morning, so we have these very funny discussions on the way to school. Sometimes he's literally talking about video games, and I'm talking about the Beatles, and we're having two different conversations. But at least we know we're talking to each other, and I'm like, well, you know. Once Jeff Emmerich took over as the Beatles engineer, really, like, their low end just really changed. He's like, right, well, in Final Fantasy IV, it's just like that because we have these ludicrous conversations on the way to school. And then there's this, we always see these people walking to school every day, dog, dog, boy, which is this man who walks these two golden retrievers, and then the boy is like, he's like behind the pack. He goes to Harrison School, where I was like, oh, boy, boy, dog, dog, boy. Boy's in the back again, but the other day the boy was in front. We're like, oh, boy is taking the lead. He's leading the pack.
Through these ongoing dramas,
yeah,
through your life.
Oh, I lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry. I got caught up with thinking about Dog Dog Boy, which I think took me off in kind of a Guided by Voices track. You recorded this entirely at Q Division, is that right?
Q Division and Zippa, and then the song you played I did down at Ardent in Memphis. So that's Jody from Big Star playing drums on that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize
that.
It
was way cool.
We did a little road trip, and we drove past Ardent, and we were sort of talking between ourselves about whether or not we could stop and sort of knock on the door and be like, can we come in and look around?
Can we look at Jody? Can we touch him?
What was that experience like recording down there?
That was a real sort of, one thing I have to say about having a stroke and being sort of debilitated for a while is that hundreds of people reached out to me, like through Facebook and Twitter. And, it's very easy to kind of say, like, oh, these social media things are so silly. But when something like that happens, people reach out to you and you really start to, like, they start to, like, really matter. Like, just when you need that little bit of encouragement, someone to be like, hey, just checking in to see how your recovery's coming. And that meant a lot. And there's a guy named Rob Anastasi, Minky Starshine out of Providence. He's a great pop writer. And when I was just kind of really basically, a month back to being able to play bass properly, and certainly not like at the top of my game, he called me and he's like, hey, I'm going to go down to Memphis and record some songs with Jody Stevens. I was like, wow. And he's like, if I pay for your ticket, will you come down and play bass? I was like, yes, I will. And it was like one of those things where I wasn't physically, totally sure I could do it physically, but I just wanted to do it so bad. I was like, I just said yes, and like, I'm not going to miss this. This guy's like, he has confidence that I can do it, so I'm going to just follow that lead.
Yeah.
So I went down and recorded with him, and then I had that song kind of half-written, and it was very Big Starry anyway, so I was like, well, maybe I could, book the next day. We could leave the drum mic set up, and we did it in like 3 hours. Jody was way cool. It was really funny because he was trying all sorts of different patterns and things, and after a little bit, I was like, I know you hate when people say, can you play like, and he's like, oh, yeah, I don't mind. I said, can you play like Jody Stevens on the first two Big Star albums? He's like, I can do that. Because that's what it needs exactly. If you listen to it, he does that. And then the coda is sort of like a shoegazy kind of freak out. And he goes off. He plays like nothing he ever played before on any Big Star album anyway, So I'm very proud of that one because it was, it's just one of those things where somebody kind of says, you could do this. Let's go out of Memphis and we'll make some music. Okay, let's do it, So,
yeah, it seems like it's led you. You've had these wonderful experiences from it. I mean, not only having this miraculous recovery and return to music, almost without skipping a beat. I mean, you really, in terms of working on your dexterity and your neuroplasticity,
it seems as if
you were right in there.
The strangest thing about it was, and a stroke is so bizarre. Because, of course, each one's different for each person. But in my case, what it was I pretty quickly built up the strength to be able to hold down a note. That only took like a month. Like, at first, I couldn't make a pinching motion at all with my hands. I couldn't close my fingers like this at all. It's my thumb, which I guess is like of a primate thing. It's kind of one of those things that separates from the monkeys. Mm-hmm. Grip being versus being able to, like, that kind of dexterity. So pretty soon I was able to kind of like hold down a note, but what I couldn't, my brain lost the knowledge of the space between notes. Like, I didn't know that to hold a fret down and then this much up further was a half step up. I just didn't know that anymore.
Yeah.
So I knew it intellectually, but my brain just didn't know that, didn't know where an octave was or anything like that. So that's what I had to relearn. And I had to like do smile therapy. And you notice even now when I talk about it and I get a little bit emotional, this side of my face kind of goes a little bit, But that was a really traumatic thing because I feel like in my life, my smile has allowed me to get away with so much stuff, like saying things that in any other place you'd get punched, but I got a little, hey, cha-cha-cha-cha,
It's the cheeky redhead
because,
thing.
Yeah, because like my mouth generally goes way before my brain considers the consequences of what I'm saying. So I've just developed a real instinct of this, like, that thing that I just said, let's not punch me over that, So it's like I've had to work on my smile. But then the other thing that's very interesting is that, there's these things where I'm sitting in front of a team of neurologists and they'll say, okay, smile. And for the life of me, it's just totally like crooked But like if somebody makes a dirty joke, boom, it goes right up, you know, it's just like, so I had 4 months where I had to like tape my face into a smile every day with kinesio tape, because the idea was that just by putting the muscles where they're supposed to be for a smile, that it would be easier for the brain to connect. Wow. So for like 4 months, I had to like take Harrison Scooby-Doo with my face taped off like a mummy. And in the morning, I'd have to think of a joke to kind of make myself laugh and smile so I could tape it up. So pretend that I didn't tell you that, okay?
My lips are sealed. My lips are absolutely sealed.
So listen, Pam, I'm really sorry I was almost late, but do you know what's going on out there on the street?
No idea.
Well, you know, out there at the traffic circle there on the way to the station? It's right by the police station there. It's the craziest thing. All the traffic's backed up. A dog has had puppies right in the rotary there.
That's not true.
It's crazy, you know. And the traffic's all backed up. And she had puppies. She's like a collie. She had puppies right in the rotary. And the police came out and they gave her a ticket for littering.
Boo!
So those are the kind of jokes I had.
I love it. I love it.
So can I sneak another song
please,
in on
please,
you?
Please, please, please. I would love you to.
I got a tune that's not on my album, but you can get it on my website, which is www.coranashley.com. And I know you're not supposed to make political statements on the college radio, so I will let this song stand for itself. And you can interpret it as you wish. And if you don't like it, write your own song. There's a vulgar stain we cannot get out, and it's tarnishing the white house. There's a vulgar stain we cannot get out, and it's tarnishing the white house. I never called myself a patriot. I never took a stand beyond complaint. But so offensive is your rhetoric. The snowflakes rise up Fifth Avenue in a righteous crush against the barricade. There's a vulgar stain we cannot get out, and it's tarnishing the White House. There's a vulgar stain we cannot get out, and it's tarnishing the White House. Thought there were some who say get over it, as if we never understood the cost, as if we couldn't read between the lines. If you pay your taxes, you get a voice. He moved on this job like a bitch, now it's time to meet the boss. There's a vulgar stain we cannot get out, and it's tarnishing a White House. There's a vulgar stain you cannot get out, and it's tarnishing the White House. Now there's a crack in the mirror of your vanity, and it's spreading day by day. A jagged reminder of just how fragile this romantic cleft. Faithless selectors and the others in your cabinetry, and you go in day by day. To borrow a toast, we all wish you luck with a capital F. There's a vulgar stain we cannot get out, it's tarnishing the White House. There's a vulgar stain we cannot get out, and it's tarnishing the White House.
Thank you so much for that. I am such a fan, and it's such a thrill to sit here and listen to you. And I'm sure that everyone in our studio audience out in the public are enjoying it as well. Thank you for that. And that song is available on your website.
Yes, and all the it's on the Bandcamp there, and all the proceeds go to the ACLU.
That's an excellent cause
to fight some stuff that's going on.
Exactly, vulgar stains. Which I very much appreciate. So thank you for that.
It's really nice to be in this room where I sat with Mikey D so many times, you know. Love that guy. I miss him so much, you know.
Yeah, I wish I had had the chance to meet him. I know it means a lot to Joel to keep the show going.
He's a very enthusiastic fellow. But I think he would really love what you're doing with the show, too.
Well, I appreciate hearing that. I understand he and I have a very similar pop sensibility.
Mm-hmm. Love that pop music.
Oh, hell yeah. Heck yeah.
So what are you playing anyway? What are you going to play?
Well,
we could very easily listen to another tune off your new album. I've also got a little Nick Zeno. I've got some Scott Damgard, a little Doug McDonald, Anna Ray. I got a bunch of stuff. What are you in the mood for? Should we do a little?
What do you got there? Do you know Doug Tuttle?
I don't know Doug Tuttle.
Now they might not have serviced the show because it's, so he's on that Trouble in Mind record, that Psych label, you know. He's from Somerville. This guy has the best like folk psych album out, and his last one was really good. The new one's called Peace Potato. Strangely enough, he's this wunderkind who like makes fuzz pedals. So I've been over to his house about fuzz pedals, but his new album is glorious. Burping across Medford.
It's an important form of communication in many cultures.
In a way, it kind of reminds me of almost like some Elephant Six tendencies, because, or almost Guided by Voices, because he'll be in the middle of a song and you'll be a minute and a half in, and all of a sudden the tape just goes and it goes into the next song, you know, which I love stuff like that. And then his voice is almost like, kind of like the Pernice brothers, kind of like the real breathy but emotional.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really good.
I happened to find it on my telephonic machine.
I recommend Doug Tuttle.
Should we play a track off Peace Potato?
Oh, you're doing it from your phone. Let's do it, yeah.
We can make that happen.
Don't ask me which one, because I've just been listening to the album.
Okay. Let's see. How about A Message from Your Heart?
I think I've heard that one.
All right. It sounds a little bit earnest. And I if I like anything, it's being earnest.
Mm.
Rather important. Boo-boom. You are listening to WMFO Medford. It's just about 10 p.m. By request for Corin Ashley, we have Doug Tuttle, A Message from Your Heart, and hopefully technology will cooperate with me at this very moment in time.